Hello, and welcome to the BioWare podcast for Dragon Age 2. I'm Victor Wachter, Community Manager for the Dragon Age franchise, and I'm here with my good friend Mike Laidlaw, Lead Designer of Dragon Age 2 and Creative Director for the Dragon Age franchise.
Hey Victor, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, doing well.
So we're here to talk about Dragon Age 2. As we speak, it's just been announced yesterday that Dragon Age 2 is in development, and so we wanted to use this first podcast to give our community a little bit of insight into what it's all about. It's already conversation and speculation on our forums and elsewhere across the internet.
Yeah, there's been a ton of speculation. It's been kind of cool to watch it go back and forth, because I know that it's kind of an informational drip feed, which can be a bit frustrating, but at the same time, it's kind of... it's neat to see people come up with their theories.
Right, exactly. I mean, what's interesting is Dragon Age 2 has been no secret, you know, and now the community is in a position where, oh my God, we're actually going to start learning about it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're here to do.
Yeah, well, hopefully what we can do is clear up a few questions that seem to be lingering. And just, you know, ideally what we're going to do is have a chance to talk about kind of, I guess, the why, almost a bit of a philosophical approach.
So lead designer and creative director. What does that mean? What's your role on the Dragon Age team?
Well, I look at it as wearing two hats. Lead designer is you know, the hands-on, working with the design team, working with guys like David Gator, you know, Yaron Jacobs, you know, all the old vets of the DA team, and really, you know, carrying through the vision, you know, making the decisions in terms of, you know, okay, what features are going in, what are we improving, what's our key kind of goals for the game. And working with, you know, all the different design departments, and then of course with, you know, art and audio and programming and all those guys to kind of make the best damn game we can. So that's kind of on the ground, you know, leadership with the team, and really trying to maintain, you know, a sense of excitement and kind of keep the vision for Dragon Age 2 pretty clear. Creative director kind of expands on that role and is kind of the hat I wear when I'm dealing with anything external. So when it comes through the Dragon Age comics, you know, in a lot of ways through the approval of the novels, even though that's still Dave and I working kind of hand in hand. And of course, we have just announced the upcoming anime treatment for Dragon Age as well. So any of those kind of ancillary products are all part of my role as creative director, is ensuring that not only are they, you know, fitting within the Dragon Age universe, but that, and my personal goal with this is to make sure that they enhance the Dragon Age universe. So kind of the rule I've been running with is I never want to take a step backward. I don't want to, you know, rehash something that you could see in another place. I don't want the novelization of the game. I want a novel that adds to the game. And I know that's an approach Dave has used as well. That's why the novels, you know, kind of add that extra layer of character to Loghain and Duncan and Merrick and so on.
Interesting. So it's not just Dragon Age 2, it's Dragon Age from Origins through Awakenings to Dragon Age 2 and beyond into future games.
That's really the approach we've been taking. You know, the executive producer, Mark Dara, and myself have had any number of long, long talks about this. And in a lot of ways, we kind of look at Dragon Age as a grand kind of campaign, right? It's not an individual adventure. It's not just a single movie, and it's not even, I don't think we even want to limit it to something like a trilogy. We want to treat this like it's a world that evolves and changes, and, you know, that I guess as the players are interacting with the games, the novels, you name it, but definitely the games being the flagship items, that they're seeing Thedas and the setting and the characters that they know grow and evolve over time. It's been a really, really challenging approach, because it'd be easy to just knock off, you know, okay, well, let's just staple two archdemons together and two wardens together and we're done. There's a sequel. But instead, what we wanted to do is kind of look at a new angle for the world and new stories. And what can we do to tell a story not just of, you know, Bob, but a story of the age that Bob lives in?
Right. And you're covering 100 years of that world. Which to me is just awesome, you know. I mean, because if you think about anything that can happen in a century, you know, any century, even the 21st century, and we're only 10 years into it,
mm-hmm.
the history playing off of each event, you know, and how, you know, specific individuals have that continuity between
them.
That's
exactly it. I think, you know, a similar event, of course, would be the kind of you know, the liberation of Ferelden, which really occurred kind of right around the beginning of the Dragon Age, and in a lot of ways, you know, what effect did that have on on the world, you know, and politically it's having, you know, it's certainly changed the relations with Orlais, you know, economically, you know, Ferelden became a nation again and stopped being, you know, kind of a subjugate kingdom. And then, of course, you know, that led to it being not in the strongest position. If you play through Origins, there's even hints that it seems like the Darkspawn or the Archdemon seemed to always start the Blight where things are weakest, where they can establish a good beachhead, which is, you know, in part why Ferelden kind of suffered the Blight as it did. And then, of course, the things that I'm looking forward to exploring are what happens in a situation where, you know, essentially Ferelden has suffered some devastation. You know, what does that do to the political shift of power? And again, so this is why it's really important for us to remember that, you know, with any of the games and any of the novels, is that all this stuff has to live in context, which again is kind of tying back to that creative director concept.
Right, and when you consider the fact that really we're not even done with Dragon Age Origins, there's still some stories to be told there to build on, and that may even have their ramifications in Dragon Age 2. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I will be frank. I don't think we will ever be done with Dragon Age Origins. The team, you know, worked for years on building up Dragon Age, building up the world, and what it established, to my mind, was, you know, an amazing jumping off point. You know, when I look at what Origins provides, it's just this tale riddled with story hooks. What are the Qunari really up to? You know, what's going on with mages and Templars? What kind of struggles come out of the Orlais and Ferelden kind of debate? I mean, what kind of tensions could flare up there? Seeing the ramifications and the effects that the Warden had on the world, and I mean, this is a very specific and personal thing for the gamers. What did their Warden do to the world? I think that's something that we honestly have to honor. We have not just a goal, but I think a responsibility to make sure that in a lot of ways, even though Dragon Age 2 isn't the continuation of your Warden, it is a continuation of the specific Thedas that you created and will continue to create as you go forward through the different games.
Nice. And because I think that's sort of that's the hook that people are looking for, the idea that they are going to shape this world. They want the decisions they've made in Origins and Awakening to matter, right? So that's awesome.
Yeah, and I think, you know, not just matter, but this is where video games, I think, come into their own as an art form, is that not only do they matter, but we can react to them. And I think that honestly, one of the most challenging things for us will be to consider, you know, how do we make a game where we can account for the choices you made, and you made some heavy choices in Origins, and yet still, you know, have some decisions for the canon and kind of the core, because there are people out there who, you know, I think, honestly, would absolutely love to play Dragon Age, would love to dip into the world, would love to, you know, explore this rich lore, but they may just not know about the game. They may not be able to play the game. It might be too hardcore, too tough, you know, because there were some difficulty elements in Origins. I'll certainly admit that. So I think in a lot of ways, what we want to do is make sure that, you know, by presenting this story that we're doing in Dragon Age 2, the tale of Hawk and his role and his flight from Ferelden, is that what we're trying to do is make a new story and a new character, but a world that is, you know, intimately familiar and intimately reactive for the players who are coming forward. So we don't want to alienate people and make them feel like, oh, geez, I can't possibly play this game because I didn't play the first one. But we want those who did to just, you know, to understand that we love this world as much as they do, and we want, you know, their I guess interactions to be something that the game celebrates.
Right, because I mean, even in Origins, you made some pretty world shaping decisions. So I think that people, I mean, you know, the future of Orzammar, the future of basically the future of everybody you visited. Mm-hmm. You know, what does Arliman's family look like at this point? You know, what are the Dalish elves doing? You basically determine the fate of all these groups, and so I think that that'll be really cool to see how that plays, you know, a little further down the road in future games.
Well, so, I think that's actually a really good point, is that you know, I think, you know, there could be a reaction to, well, you didn't cover everything in Dragon Age 2. And I mean, I don't think we're going to be able to cover every single decision, but I mean, I think from a long-term approach, what we really hope to do is see that the decision you make in Dragon Age Origins will matter far into the future, not just for one game, not just for Awakening, but, you know, that things should come back to surprise you later, that you thought, oh God, I thought they'd forgotten about that.
Right. So speaking of things that shape the world, apparently Hawk, the main character of Dragon Age 2, is according to the press release and everything we've read so far, is the person who changed the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty bold statement. Let's talk a little bit about Hawk. Who exactly is Hawk?
Hawk is a mystery. He's like a walking enigma, and to my mind, Dragon Age 2, the game, is in a lot of ways an experience in which the players are answering a question, and that question is, who is the man or woman who changed the world? So the role of Hawk is one where, in a lot of ways, we already know that Hawk has had this dramatic impact, that things have shifted as a direct result, and throughout the game, what we'll be doing is exploring kind of the most important moments in Hawk's life. And this is why we're building a game that covers the largest span of time we've ever done before, where, you know, a full decade is something we're exploring. And through the course of that decade, we get to see not just, you know, how he changed the world, but why. And in a lot of ways, these are questions that I don't honestly know the answer to. I don't know Hawk's motivation, because that's where the players come in. They're the ones answering this question. And so, I mean, the things that we know about Hawk that are kind of, you know, fixed in stone is that he did have this dramatic impact on the world. And it's, you know, I don't want to spoil what exactly has occurred or what events have occurred. But we know that Hawk escaped from Lothering, the town that burned during the course of Dragon Age Origins. You know, you traveled through it, your warden traveled through it, and this is where he's from. And his family have fled, escaping the Blight, have managed to, you know, fight for their survival and scrape through, you know, a Ferelden that's not just at war, but being corrupted by the Darkspawn. And that he, you know, through the course of that, makes his way up to Kirkwall, which is a city that's just absolutely steeped with history. It's an imperial port that you know, has, since the Tevinter Empire has kind of pulled back, this city has become a hub of trade because of their position just north of Ferelden. They're kind of the gateway to the larger continent, and they're right along the major shipping route to Orlais. And in this city, Kirkwall, this is where Hawk, kind of has his impact. This is where the events that changed the world begin.
So it sounds like, from what I'm listening to, it sounds like the Legend of Hawk, in some ways, is written, but it's not. It's like there's this legend that already exists, and the player is deciding what that legend is. It's sort of a interesting storytelling technique.
It is. It's something new. It's been done historically for years, is that sense of okay, the something's happened and we're investigating how. In a lot of ways, you know, like a CSI episode is like, well, someone is dead. How did that happen? But this is the glory of video games to me, is that Dragon Age 2 lets the players kind of determine what happened, rather than it being, you know, this predetermined plot that runs through. So The mechanic that we're using to do this is called a frame narrative. It's a storytelling technique. It's where basically one story is effectively telling another story. The play within a play within Hamlet is an example of this. Or, you know, a more modern example would be something like The Princess Bride, right? Where you do have the story of Wesley and Buttercup and, you know, all this, you know, grand adventure happening. But around it, you have, you know, Fred Savage and his grandpa, who, you know, on a sick day are kind of reading from this storybook. So in a lot of ways, you know, there's as much story about watching, you know, this kind of feverish and disaffected young man get more and more entranced by this story his grandfather's weaving. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's a really, really compelling technique, because it means that not only can we have characters who, you know kind of where the world is headed and where things are going, but they can ask the questions to get us to those most important moments. What I don't want to do is feel like any moment of Dragon Age 2 is just wasted shoe leather. I want to dive right into, like, kind of the heart of it, the politics, the struggles, the grand discoveries that Hawk makes.
Cool. So how much, how much freedom does a player have in determining the course of this frame narrative? Would you say it's as it progresses through the decades? I guess I'm asking, how linear or how nonlinear would you say it is?
Well, the game itself will move forward through the decade, through a period of time. So we're not trying to build a game that's kind of jumping you around a timeline where that can get a bit confusing. Though, you know, there are games like Eternal Darkness that really just nailed that as the effect. But I think it's like, you know, when you're trying to get inside your character's head, you're really trying to, you know, dive in and feel like you're role playing. You're not hearing the story of a family, which was the Eternal Darkness model. In this case, we're trying to tell, you know, have you tell us how this world turns out. So in the course of that, what we're trying to do is give you big swaths of freedom to kind of explore, to meet characters, to kind of understand them, and to kind of, you know, achieve your objectives your own way, to kind of work through these different political and you know, historical situations. And then, you know, we're going to advance time forward and take a look at how that turned out, how the decisions you made affected Kirkwall, Hawk, people around Hawk, and so on, so that, you know, in a lot of ways, we get some of my favorite parts of Dragon Age Origins, you know, where I fire up this epilogue that has all these, like, oh, man, Ban Tegan got married, and look what happened to Arl Eamon, and all those kind of elements. But you get to see them happen more than once, and you get to see them happen kind of in the middle of the game. And from my mind, if we have any major success, it's the thought that there's a player who sees how things turn out and kind of course corrects his character and goes, oh, God, I was too much of a dick to that group of people. I need to rectify that. Because if we do that, that's when I think players get really engaged and feel like they are telling their story.
So this this frame narrative, I like the example of the grandfather in Princess Bride.
Princess Bride, yeah.
Yeah. So who's telling us this story?
It's not so much a story being told as almost an interrogation. Two characters named Cassandra and Varric. And I don't want to get too deep into who they are yet. I want to reveal that a little bit later. But suffice it to say that Cassandra is a representative of the Chantry, who is desperate to find out about Hawk, because what she's trying to do is understand why he made the decisions he did. And in many ways, she's trying to find him or her and track Hawk down to really, you know, look at the way the world is standing on the brink of war. Because that is something she establishes early on, is that things are very, very bad right now. And that perhaps if they could find the person who was kind of there when it all began, then there's a chance they could fix things.
And by fixing things, we probably, at least occasionally, mean grabbing a sword, casting some spells, and dropping some enemies.
Indeed.
So let's talk a little bit about combat, since there have been plenty of questions about that.
Well, certainly, you know, when you read it's enhanced combat, that could mean any number of things. It could mean we've moved to, you know, rock, paper, scissors, because that's fast. But no, what we did is we sat down with the gameplay team and with the designers that we'd worked with, and we kind of went through two steps. Step one was a brutal, honest examination of Dragon Age Origins combat, and you know, looking through the reviews, looking through all the feedback the community's provided, because, I mean, you know, the guys have been great about, you know, what they loved, what they hated about Origins, and really trying to understand where we could make improvements that would change the experience for the better. And so, to my mind, the things that we've done, the main directions, is we've made combat more responsive. So, I mean, that obviously can make people go, oh, well, that, what does that mean? Well, what it means to me is that, to put it in not too fine a point on it, when I'm pushing a button, be it on my keyboard, on my controller, wherever the hell I'm pushing that button, I want it to make something amazing happen on my screen. So when you think about, you know, how Origins played out through in terms of combat, you would kind of, you know, you were playing tactically, you would issue orders, you would, you know, say, okay, Alistair, I want you to move up and hit that guy. And then what would happen is that he would kind of move into position and eventually kind of, you know, he would line up and then combat would begin. So the question that we asked ourselves and the challenge I put to the you know, gameplay team was, is there a way we could make it that when you issue that order, when you say, you, I want you up there fighting, that character moves in almost immediately and begins attacking? If I want to, you know, cast a spell, do I want to stand there waggling my hands for a few minutes, or do I want rains of fire to come lashing down from the sky? Well, I think those are pretty self-evident answers. And the guys ran with that as a philosophy. You know, how can we make something happen almost immediately, how can we improve the overall responsiveness of the game? And that is the primary change we've made to combat, and it is infinitely better.
What's different? What's going to be familiar?
Well, the familiar elements will be, you know, the ability to issue orders, the fact that you are still controlling, you know, a party, right? You know, we haven't lost any elements like that. You're able to, you know, issue, you know, say to your mage, okay, I need you to heal here. I need an inferno here. With a rogue, you can, you know, obviously want to worry about the tactical positioning. You know, am I behind? Am I getting the optimal backstabs? And you know, certainly you can, you know, either pull your left trigger just like in Origins, or press spacebar to pause the game and, you know, look at the battlefield and figure out, okay, all right, where is the guy who's throwing the fireballs at me? Because that guy needs to die. So, in a lot of ways, the tactics, the pause and play, the issuing of orders and giving that kind of sense of battlefield command has not gone away. If anything, we're aggressively looking at the way tactics works and kind of the tactics tables that come preloaded, so that, you know, for people who don't want to dive in on tactics, there's an improved experience there. It's, you know, basically, I want my party to be smarter was the challenge I put down to the guys working on that system. But in addition to that, you know, I think really that's where things have stayed the same. And when we talk about, you know, my boss, the executive producer, Mark Dara's kind of marching orders were, I do not want to lose things that were amazing about Origins. And to my mind, like, the tactics and that sense of party control was part of that. But then where we made the enhancements in turn was, okay, well, I can issue these orders. Why couldn't I see them, you know, executed near immediately, right? Why couldn't someone leap into combat instead of, you know, shuffling forward kind of awkwardly? And that's where we focus most of our attention.
Right. One of my favorite things about that, Origins, fighting in Origins, was the way my players could, my characters, my party, my companions, could kind of play off of one another. For example, I could, I could have my own mage, my character, and Morrigan. My mage could be casting Blizzard, and Morrigan could be casting Tempest to combine into the Storm of the Century. Morrigan could hit a bunch of guys with Cone of Cold, and Zevran could, you know, hit the Whirlwind at that point. Do we keep that kind of same interplay? Have we improved it at all?
We do. We've actually aggressively tried to improve it. I think Origins did a really, really cool thing by introducing that spell combo concept, right? Certain spells working together to have an extra effect. So what we're exploring right now is kind of the idea of a cross-class combo where, you know, mages can interact with rogues on even a more consistent basis than you've outlined, where not only can I have those interactions, but I can actually build a party that takes advantage of those interactions. Like, you know, I'm taking specific abilities. I'm, you know, kind of customizing my party to deal death in the most efficient way possible. And I think that's, you know, there's a, you know, class of player who doesn't need to worry about that. But I think when you think about this in terms of, like, is this an RPG? Is it, you know, still got that depth? I think that you have to have systems like that where the player not only is able to, you know, moment to moment, really take advantage of the situation, but where they can go into combat going, I have a strategy here. I have Zevran and Morrigan, and they are going to team up in this way. Now, of course, no plan survives contact with the enemy, but if you don't feel like you can go in with a battle plan, then I think we're failing in terms of getting that tactical and that think like a general aspect of it. So that's been a major focus for us. And in a lot of ways, that's two sides. It's not only the design of how you can upgrade your character, how you can customize them, but also how we design the encounters. How can we improve on the way enemies interact with me? And how can they seem smarter and, you know, really push me to the edge, you know, early game, late game, so that I'm adapting to situations rather than just, here we go, the fire and forget combat.
Nice. So we're having in addition, we're actually getting smarter enemies.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely the plan, is that, you know, as the game progresses, we're even introducing enemies with new behaviors that leave you going, oh man, wow, I'm going to have to adjust my strategy here. But then to make sure that within the game, there is the tools to adjust to those new strategies.
Nice. So do you feel like if I played Origins, and I have many times, am I going to be able to jump in and feel like it's familiar?
Absolutely. The big thing for us was to make sure that the interfaces, because we did a ton of work to work on the interface from the console, the interface on the PC, to kind of make sure that those evoked the type of gameplay we wanted to. So, you know, at that point, to my mind, the wheel is awfully round. So, you know, tossing it out and restarting, it's like, well, now you communicate through song. It would probably undercut the gameplay we were trying to do. I really want players who have played Origins to be able to just dive right in and go, oh, okay, cool. I know exactly how this plays. Now let's take a look at what's new. And that's where, you know, the improvements in terms of that responsiveness, I think, will be almost instantly visible.
Well, cool. So I don't want to talk your ear off too much. There's a little ways between now and the time we enter the free marches.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I am itching to give out more details, but I think at this point it would be a disservice just to, you know, like, you know, there's so many cool things that we're trying to do with this game that you know, that we're trying to evoke the Origins elements. We're trying to get that sense of that improved combat. And, you know, as we get closer, it's going to be very cool and I think really satisfying for the team to see people kind of engage with Dragon Age 2, because on the team itself, the excitement's really high. It's something we've taken in a direction where people are like, wow, this is pretty fresh and pretty cool. So as the details roll out, I think it's going to be really neat to watch people's reactions to them.
Exactly. And for my purposes, I have more of these podcasts to do, so I don't want to blow my whole wad in the first one.
Well done.
Exactly. So any final thoughts? Anything you want to say about Dragon Age 2, about what you're seeing in the community? Anything that's kind of exciting?
Well, I think the big thing is that, you know, I mean, I'm watching the community reactions, and of course there's a fair bit of fear because, you know, difference is potentially terrible. I get that. I understand, you know, kind of the you know, oh wow, has this changed everything? And I think the big thing would be, you know, looking at the community is, you know, these guys have been with us for years. Some people have just joined, and honestly, it's really great to see the community's feedback, to kind of get a sense of how they feel about it. And for me, you know, even though there is a fair amount of I guess fear about, you know, oh my God, are these things that are different horrifying? I think it's just awesome to see people who are so engaged, who so want Dragon Age to be good, to be the franchise that they've been looking for and stuff. That to me, you know, it's a great reminder that we do have a responsibility to them to honor the story that they've been telling us about their warden and about Thedas.
Totally, yeah.
So, it's awesome to see that interaction, and I'm sure that as we get a little deeper in, the some of the worries will be taken away.
I think so. I mean, I think it's basically the information void that we're going to work on filling over time. Mm-hmm. But yep. You know, people only talk about things they care about. So
yeah, absolutely.
So it's great that they're talking.
It's funny. I don't know if the community is aware of this, but I mean, like, you know, are you telling these guys that you're sending us like weekly updates that you know you are the man keeping us in the loop? If they don't know about that, then they should, because you know.
I'm not sure that I have. You know, I mean, I'll respond to, you know, I've been doing the updates for the upcoming patch 1.04, and mm-hmm. you know, prior to that, you know, I'd go through the tech forums, you know, and say, okay, thanks for the report, where I could, you know, where it was something new that I wasn't aware of, you know, and you know, I'd tell them I was forwarding it to the dev team, but no, I'm not sure they know the process.
No, it's definitely happening, and I mean, personally, I appreciate it because it's, you know, I mean, it's there's, you know, for instance, this announcement, there's been an explosion, so it's really hard to parse all that. And while, you know, we're paging through some of the threads, it's just great to have, you know, the sense that the community is being looked after, and you know that I get to hear what they're saying and kind of the you know the main concerns and stuff like that, so we can look at, you know, are we honestly addressing that when we look at the design of the game, and I think we are, but you know it's good to get, you know, honestly to be kept honest.
Well, good. I'm glad the community feedback is helpful to you. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up for this edition of the BioWare Dragon Age 2 podcast. Mike, I'd like to thank you for coming on, chatting with me a little bit about Dragon Age 2 and helping me to talk to the community and
answer some questions. Yeah, I think it's good. It's a hell of a great opportunity as well. I'm glad we're doing these podcasts.
And to the listeners, thanks for joining us on BioWare's Dragon Age 2 podcast. You can follow all the latest Dragon Age 2 and Dragon Age Origins news at dragonage.bioware.com and join the community at social.bioware.com to discuss Dragon Age and all your favorite BioWare games.